the 14th of September, Heritage Day. Is it Heritage Day?
Yes,
24th of September, not 14th.
It's a Heritage Month.
Yo, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes, I'll see you.
No, it's a Heritage Month.
Oh, Heritage Month, okay, not Heritage Day. We part of our heritage is to be an excellent, efficient, and high quality and high value service provided to our people. Hence, the Public Service Commission is here to say how far are we in that journey. They have met with the department, they've gone through their functions and structures and people. And in the monitoring and evaluation process, they are submitting a report today to the portfolio committee for us to say what is happening in the department. My name is Stone Cesar, I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee on rural development and land reform. You know the minister, you deal with him. The committee members, starting from the bottom there, that's this November. She comes from Northern Cape. There's Wenya Mabila. She comes from Umalak. There's Miss Baba. She comes from Singa, but she represents Gauteng from here. She was sent by Gauteng, but she originally comes from Singa. She prefers to say that she comes from Gauteng. And then goes Mandela, the grandson of our legend, Tatu Mandela. His name is Nkosi Zwelivelile Mandela. He comes from the Eastern Cape. And Miss Stain, Annette Stain comes from Eastern Cape. But next to the big water lake there, Harib Dam, she's the wife of a farmer, she's a trained nurse. She has now become a full-time politician.
You don't say my wife
here. I won't say that. The people that are absent is Nkosi Zulu, Prince Zulu. And we also have Miss Mazibuko, but I'm told Miss Mazibuko is running late. She's on her way. We also have members from IFP, Nkosi Qebekhulu. We also have a member from UDM. The chief whip of UDM is Ntaphane, who's also upset. Also UCDP, remember the former Nkosi Mangope. He used to own that party, but is now out of the party. We have Mr. Chetelo, who's representing the CTP in the committee. Sometimes we get visitors from the PAC, Mr. Mbashele, who also sometimes had a privilege of being visited by I nearly said Mr. Lille, but Mr. Lille has since become the mayor of Cape Town. She usually visits us when critical issues are dealt with. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I noted that you are three men, and there's a sensitive part in our committee because we also have fewer men than women in our committee. Go ahead, Chief.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and Honorable Minister and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on the Rural Development and Land Reform. We want firstly to express our appreciation to the fact that the portfolio committee has deemed it necessary to invite the Public Service Commission to make a presentation on the report that it has released. We want to emphasize the fact that from what I've been informed, that in the history of the PSC-M&E transversal system, there never has been a time when the PSC was invited in particular by this portfolio committee to engage, you know, with its report. We have released quite a number of reports, as you will see later on, and but this is a fact of its time, its history, and to us it's indicative of the seriousness with which the portfolio committee regards the work of the PSC. And in that context, we appreciate it very much, because we believe that Parliament in general is a key stakeholder of the PSC, and in particular the portfolio committees, which are the engine of Parliament. And our primary responsibility is to support our constitutional democracy, to deepen it. Our primary responsibility is to promote the vision that is outlined in Section 195 of the kind of a public service that our constitution is envisaging. And this report in particular is an attempt by the PSC to promote that kind of a vision. This report in particular is an attempt by the PSC to determine the extent to which the public service is moving forward towards the realization of a public service that is defined by the 9 principles outlined in Section 195. It is for that reason that we appreciate it very, very much, because it is only when we engage with the portfolio committee, when we can actually carry over that the recommendations that we are making, they make sense, and that the portfolio committee can take them in order to strengthen their oversight responsibility. So we are very, very pleased with this invitation, and we are looking forward to a meaningful engagement. We are looking forward to see to it that the reports that we are producing actually do not simply taken and put in shelves to gather dust, but that they are engaged upon. And then in that way, we can make sure that we are trying to strengthen our democracy, and that we will make sure that our people actually are in a position to see the kind of a public service which is envisaged in our report. Without much ado, I'll therefore at this point request Kobus van der Merwe, who is a chief director in the branch monitoring and evaluation. And I must also point out that we are being accompanied by Juice Khwedi, who is a support for the Public Service Commission. Over to you, Kobus.
Take the committee to the report. I'll give a little bit of background and then explain our methodology, and then I'll present the findings, and then we can quickly talk about the way forward. The Public Service Commission has designed a monitoring and evaluation system that assesses compliance of departments with the 9 values in Section 195 of the Constitution. This year we have assessed 22 departments. Every year we take a number of departments. The most departments in this year's sample are agriculture department, we've done all the agriculture department. We've done all the offices of the premier. So that is about 20 of the 22. And then a few national departments, including the Department of Rural Development and Land. So the purpose of this briefing is to present the findings of our ME system on the department. Our ME assessment, I must emphasize, is also complemented by other work done by the Public Service Commission, and I've only listed two examples there. We have done a meta-evaluation of a review of LRAD project performance. This is based on a report that the department itself commissioned. The purpose of this meta-evaluation that we do from time to time is to assess the quality of reports commissioned by departments themselves and to raise a bit of interest in some of those findings. And our finding on this meta-evaluation report was actually that the report commissioned by the department is quite a good report and contains very valuable recommendations. So we published a little report on the department report. And I brought a few along here. They are attached here. Then another example is we have done, it's a little bit dated by now, but we have done an evaluation of integration and coordination in the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. Now it has been overtaken by the new Comprehensive Rural Development Program. But the ISRDP, the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program, was built around the notion of coordination. The whole program was built around that. Around coordination. And it is still one of the central challenges faced by the new Comprehensive Rural Development Program. So we are convinced that the recommendations in that little bit older report, not so old, 2009, are still relevant. Our recommendations say how the issue of coordination can be tackled. So that's just to also refer the committee to some of the other reports apart now from the ME report that we will be talking about today. Now our methodology, our system consists of a number of one or two indicators for each of the values in section 195 of the Constitution. And if I go into the detail of the presentation, we'll see what types of indicators we are using. Now linked to each of the indicators are a set of five standards or normative statements, and linked to the standards, a scoring scale. So the methodology involves that we collect information in the department about actual practice, actual administrative practice, and we compare the actual with the norm, with the standard, with what we expect there to be, and then we award a score to the department. Our information sources are reports, databases, interviews, we even go into files. So a variety of information sources that we use for these reports. And then, like I said, depending on the level of compliance to the standard, the score is awarded to the report. Now, many of our indicators, in your letter, you've asked that we specifically refer to the regulatory framework that governs all public service departments, and many of our indicators use a variety of these rules, regulations, policies governing the public service. And I've listed just a few examples here on the slide. For instance, the Discipline Code and Procedures, the Public Finance Management Act, and Treasury Guidelines on Performance Information. The Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, Risk Management, Guidelines on Annual Reporting, Promotion of the Access to Information Act, the Regulations on Recruitment and Election, the Skills Development Act, and the Human Resources Policy of the Department of Public those are just a few examples. Most of our indicators are backed up by some policy, some regulation, some framework, according to which the publishers operate. Some of the principles are less regulated, like development orientation as an example, or participation in policy making, also less regulated. But most of the principles are also underscored by some policy framework. After scoring the department, we then rate the department as either, and you'll see the cut-off point there, either excellent, good, adequate, poor, or no performance. Now going then now to the scores that we have awarded the department, and you'll see there on the average on the bottom line we have awarded a score of 74%, which is quite a good performance. And going then to the detail of the performance of principles, the scores in most of the principles are quite good, with the exception of principle 2, efficiency, economy and effectiveness, where the department only scored 40%, and I'll explain why that is so. And then under accountability, where the department only scored 60%, and I'll also explain why that is so. But I'll go into all the principles. There is the same score just in a graphic presentation, so you see the low score of 40% and the adequate score there. Little bit lower score under accountability, which is principle 6. Now after an exercise like this, we then the Public Service Commission issued recommendations, and in this case we issued 6 recommendations, which need to be implemented by the department within a specific time frame. And we also do a follow-up on implementation of those recommendations. So that little table just says one recommendation under principle 1, which is high standard of professional ethics. One recommendation under development orientation, which is principle 3, and so on. Now, if I can now quickly take you through the report principle by principle. The performance against the principle of professional ethics was good, a score of 75%. The indicator that we use under this principle is how the department deal with misconduct. And we found that all sample managers, we interview a few managers, and then we ask them about the discipline code procedures and find out whether they sufficiently know the policy. And the managers that we sampled had a working knowledge of the procedures for dealing with discipline. A next standard that we test the department against is how long it takes to deal with a discipline case, to finalize a discipline case. And the average that the department takes to deal with a discipline case is 127 working days, and our standard is 80 working days. So that's an area where the department can improve. Then we also expect for the department to really deal with this, and there should be regular management reporting on misconduct and on discipline. And that is happening in the department. But we found no evidence of management actually responding to those management reports. But in many of our standards, we don't just look at the compliance. We also ask a testing question. So in this case, we say, okay, you have a management report, but what happens after having received this management report? There should be some action taken on it, some management response on the report. And then lastly, the department conducted sufficient training on misconduct and discipline matters. So that was also a strength for the department. Going to the efficiency, economy, and effectiveness, where the department scores lower. Firstly, our first standard is the level of expenditure, and the department had under expenditure of 8.4%, which is outside the sort of general accepted limit of 2% for the national treasury. Then going to the performance indicators in the department's plans and reported against in the annual report, we found that all those performance indicators were measurable, so that that is our, the first thing we look at is whether those performance indicators are measurable. But then the actual performance, which is the next point there, was of the 33 outputs appearing in the annual report, only 10 were achieved. So there, and I think that is generally known that some of the land reform objectives have not been achieved or are not being achieved. But on the positive side, the fact that there were only 33 outputs reported against already tells us that the department has put clearly what the important outputs and outcomes are. Many times we go through annual reports, you get 300 outputs. And then it's very difficult to get to a summative assessment of what the actual performance was, because you must now sort of work through hundreds of outputs. So the department did clearly spell out what the important things are, and that's why there were only sort of 33 key things that they reported on. Despite the poor achievement of objectives, the department did give reasons for that performance, and that is the strength in our view. Okay, to principle three, which is development orientation. Now there our indicator is how the department implements development or poverty reduction projects. And there are many such projects in the department, and the department scored very good also against this principle, maybe 80%. We make a sample of those projects and go through the documentation for each of those projects. And we said that there was an acceptable standard of beneficiary participation. That is the first thing we check. Beneficiaries did participate in the design, implementation, and evaluation of the project. Good project management standards were followed. The projects were aligned with integrated development plans on the local government level. And the department assessed these projects, and they learned lessons from successes and failures. And an example here is exactly the report that I referred to earlier. The department commissioned a report on all the LRAD projects, and many lessons came from that report, and the department is implementing those lessons. In fact, that our sample of development projects is a small sample. The report I'm referring to did an assessment of about 1,000 projects. And the department can be commended for commissioning that report, and like I said earlier, it's a good report. But then lastly, we also have a standard which says, okay, were these projects now successful? And we couldn't determine that because the department didn't submit to us closed out or implementation reports for us to determine the success of that project. Into principle four, there our indicator is compliance with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. All decisions that were submitted for assessment were taken in accordance with departmental policy. There was clear delegation of authority, and the decisions were taken by duly authorized officials. We look at the content of the sample decisions, the decisions taken in the chair, and perhaps an area of improvement, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act requires that one should give prior notice of the decision, and one should in that letter tell the person affected by the decision that he has an opportunity to make a representation or a right to appeal or review the decision. The prior notice was given in those cases, but the letter didn't spell out what the appeal or the review process is. So that's also an area of important move. Going to principle five, public participation in policy making, we support the department 100% there. department has many processes in place to ensure participation in policy. The department has a policy. Our first standard is that the department should have a policy on participation in policy making. I said earlier that this is one of the principles of public participation in policy making, which is in the public service less regulated. So we like to see that the department has its own policy in the absence then of sort of a general public service wide policy. And the department does have such a policy. The department has a procedure in place for soliciting that inputs from the public in policies and programs. But then we also ask, it doesn't help you ask for inputs and you don't then systematically consider those inputs. And we found that the department did consider and acknowledge the contributions obtained during such consultations. And comprehensive reports are produced with recommendations. So the department has quite a solid public participation process. Accountability, principle 6. There the department also, we still regard it as adequate, but the performance were in comparison to the other principles less good. The main reason for that was the department received a qualified audit opinion. In fact, you can see our own system, probably the audit opinion should weigh more heavier in this whole system. But nevertheless, we only, for our purposes, take the audit opinion into account under principle 6. The department has an MNE system, a monitoring and mediation system, that's a strength. We also look at risk management under this principle. And the department do have a risk register, assesses all those risks, and have measures in place to address those risks. But we are still concerned about the issues raised by the Auditor General. The department has a fraud prevention plan, that's a strength. But like in all the other principles, we go a little bit further. We ask, okay, you have a fraud prevention plan, but how was that implemented? And the department scored less well when we checked implementation of the plan and also their capacity, investigation capacity to investigate incidences of fraud. Not enough investigation capacity. That's one of the areas that we checked under, well, let's say implementation capacity. Going to principle 7, transparency. Again, excellent performance, 90%. We have two indicators there. The one is the quality of the department's annual report. And our second indicator, which I will go to on the next slide, is compliance with the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Now, the first thing that we check on the annual report is just how it's presented and its readability. And we found it's a very good report, readable, written in simple English, quite understandable, so that's a strength. But then we also check the Treasury has a guideline which spells out in detail all the items that should be covered in an annual report. And the department covered 78% of those areas, but our standard is 90%. So we actually want sort of very near to full compliance with all those areas listed by the Treasury, because all those areas are important. So if one of the areas are left out, then essential information is not given to Parliament or to the public. And then one of the key requirements, and that also is in the legislation, never mind in the guideline on annual reporting, is that the department should, in its annual report against predetermined objectives. And the department report is structured like that. So that's also a thing. Then going to the next indicator under transparency, that's access to information. The department complies with all the basic requirements. It should have a deputy information officer, which anybody can approach if they want information in the department. It should have a manual on access to information. we should have a procedure. So if somebody asks for information, what procedures are followed? And it must report the requirement of Section 32 of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. They must report to the Human Rights Commission, and they are submitting those Section 32 reports. An area for improvement is that the Department's manual on access to information was not recently updated. So many of the contact details and things like that were out of date. Going to Principle 8, good human resource management and career development practices. So the Department has a detailed recruitment policy in place, complies with the good practice standards. But then to test implementation of the policy, we check how long a department takes to fill a post. And the department on average takes 5 months to fill a post, and our standard is 3 months. So that's an area for improvement. And we have chosen our indicators in such a manner that we want to generalize towards areas that we have not tested. So there's a recruitment process in the department which takes longer than the ideal. And if we now generalize, we say other processes, if this process is not so efficient, then probably other processes are also not so efficient. We don't restrict our conclusion just to the specific indicator that we are testing. We have chosen the indicators in such a manner that we want to generalize about the department's performance. There were regular management reporting on recruitment, which means the department knows how long it takes, and they are taking appropriate management action. There's a strength there. And then last, going to our second indicator on the good human resource management practices. We check the implementation of the Skills Development Act and Skills Development Policy. And the department does have a workplace skills plan in place, which outlines all the critical skills needed by the department. The department also implemented nearly 3,000 skills development activities. So 3,000 people have benefited from these skills development activities. But then, again, to go a little bit further than compliance, we say, okay, now, but what did this skills development effort change? And the department couldn't give us evidence on whether they have assessed the impact on actual service delivery of the skills development activities. So lots of activities. There is a plan, it's implemented. But as they did the training, then you need to get the performance. And then going to the last principle 9, is retroactivity. The department complies with the Employment Equity Act. So they have an Employment Equity Policy and Employment Equity Plan. When you go to the Employment Equity Target, the target for black people on senior management level has been achieved. The target there is 75%, and the department is already on 77%. The department has also achieved the target for people with disabilities, which is actually, I wouldn't say an exception, but very few departments have achieved the 2% target. And then the department also hasn't achieved yet the new target set for women on senior management level. The new target, the date is also already passed, but the previous target was 30%. The department has achieved that, but the new target of 50% not yet achieved. So that's an explanation for a little bit of lower score under this principle. Regular management reporting is done on representativity and employment equity. The department takes action on those reports. And then apart from just chasing the target, the department has also implemented 74% of diversity management measures that we check for the department again. So to conclude, the compliance levels are satisfactory. in many instances actually very weak. And this lays the institutional basis for performance. But we must emphasize it's not a sufficient condition for performance. And one saw that in the lower score under effectiveness efficiency in economy, where we test actual achievement of outcome. And secondly, the department probably also needs to concentrate on the quality of compliance. So, if we make again the example of the Skills Development Act, it's all well and good to do all these training activities, but it should, in the end, translate to better performance. And that is not easy to achieve. And to really make a direct link between training and performance, not easy to achieve, but that is the next step for the department, is to sort of change the compliance to a high quality of compliance also. And then lastly, the compliance needs to be translated into first level performance, which means careful management of all the factors determining success, not just the compliance factors. But we emphasize the high compliance level do lay the institutional basis for performance. And I think the department is well geared to deliver on the department on government mandate. On the way forward, we presented a report to the department on 11 August. The department accepted all the findings and recommendations and undertook to provide the PSC with an implementation plan. We were actually quite the department took the report in a very positive light, and we were actually quite heartened by the engagement. And like I said earlier, we will then after 6 months do a follow-up on implementation of recommendations. Thank you. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. in your remarks, you pointed out this male-dominated delegation. I need to point out that we are really stressed at the present moment. We are having two international conferences. One is running in Sandton, and some of the officials as well as commissioners are there. The conference is finished up today. Another commissioner, Ms. Nzimande, is also accounting in one of the committees here in Parliament Communication. So it is not by design, but actually just an accident. thank you. I think without much ado, we will leave it to the committee. I think we have presented the report as requested, and we will appreciate, you know, an engagement as requested in the form of questions and answers or comments, etc., etc. Thank you.
I give this opportunity to members to raise questions. Treasury regulations.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the report as presented by the PSC, as it complied with the mandate of the PSC as enshrined in Section 195, Subsection 4 of the Constitution. Chairperson, I think it is our responsibility as the committee to provide support to the PSC. I think the recommendations or the findings of the PSC, as indicated in the report, will assist the department to strengthen its performance. But on the side of the committee, I think we have to assist by making sure that the recommendations, as indicated by the department, are implemented. But Chairperson, what I want just to, when looking at the report, I think I want to commend the department, because when looking at the report, it indicates really that there's progress. There are more strengths than the areas of improvement, and also to appreciate the role that has been played by department by responding promptly to the report, coming out with some intervention strategies to deal with the areas of improvement that has been indicated by the PSC. There are two areas of improvement that has been indicated that I don't see in the report with what interventions are going to be made by the department there. The first one, the area of gender representation, because I think it's part of the report, and also the issue of the qualified report, which includes the underspending. Chair, when looking at the recommendations, I don't know whether it will be practical for the department to ensure that they implement the recommendations in 6 months, because I think the recommendations are supposed to be categorized in time frame, those that can be able to be implemented within a short space of time, medium term, and also the long term, especially the financial related recommendations. So I don't know the practicality from the departmental side of ensuring that those recommendations are being met within, are being implemented within 6 months. Then from the PSC side, maybe to get the clarity, how often do you do such investigations to departments? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, mine is a very simple question. I understand from my colleague who's been on this committee for longer than I have that this is the first time the PSC is appearing before us in this term. And I certainly know from my previous committee that the PSC appeared quite regularly. So I wanted to find out whether or not you provided the committee with the two previous reports that you commissioned on LRAD and on the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. And if so, did you have any plans perhaps to present it to us? Because I think having a report from the PSC is a quite important part of our oversight. And certainly from my perspective, I would like to have a look at both of those reports, particularly with respect to LRAD. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. I think most of the questions have been asked by my colleagues. It was just that one of the things that I wanted to comment on was that some of the pages were not really very much clear, like this one that is very much dark, that one doesn't say. And also within our slides, I don't know whether I didn't go through thoroughly. Six. Yeah, it's page six. The other one, I think, is there is another slide. I think it's the conclusion one that was there. That's also not here. Yeah, there are some slides that are not here that appeared there. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm partly covered by the last words of the presentation, where it says this self-sufficient conditions for compliance. It's not to say that the department, by ticking the all the things, Chair, and I think it's something that we have to work on. And I had this complaint, or not really complaint, when we received the annual report of the department of the strategic plan. It's like we are ticking these boxes. And if the start or the baseline that we start off is very low, and I just wanted to ask a question to the presenters. If you look at, you are saying you're looking at the same indicators in all the departments, and there was mention of specific policies that we need to look off at. And it is mentioned also in the report that strength is that the fact that they do have the policy in place, but the outcome of that, in the implementation of that, I feel that maybe we need to find out more as a committee, or maybe there must be a bigger emphasis on, you know, the findings or the outcomes. Because for me, the fact that you do have a policy in place, those kinds of things is very good, but the implementation and the outcome of that is something that is lacking. And the reason why I'm saying this is I can just think of something very quickly that I always have a problem with, is communication between, for instance, beneficiaries and the department. And I know, just I don't have the figure in top of my head, but it was very low with the department's O scoring in this year. So to start off with a base of, say, for instance, 5%, moving it up to a 15% compliance in communication. So in a long-winded thing is just to have it, does it count more points in the scoring as to the outcome of that, of having a policy on gender or something like that? So I'm just trying to find out, to get to a percentage of the scoring, which one of these points would score more, or are they scored on an equal basis for the fact that you have it, or what is the outcome of that? And then also linked to that, if you go to Principle 3, Development Orientation Process and Administration, it says the first one, 6 poverty reduction projects were initiated and looked up at. Who decides on things like this? Say, for instance, if you check the monitoring of people, are they happy with the department? And this one specifically, the poverty reduction projects, which is here, who gives you that information, or do you just draw it out of a list of things specifically? And then again on this one, the success of the projects could not be determined because the implementation reports were not submitted. So, you know, for me, it's the first time that we are dealing with this report, but it seems to me like it's a checking the boxes, ticking the boxes exercise. And I want to compliment the department that at least they have the boxes to be ticked. But my problem is, if you read all these principles, the bottom one, dealing with the implementation part of it, is the one that is the area for improvement, and that is what worries me more, because that's the section that we deal with most, dealing with the actual outcomes of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm partly covered, Chair, but I would have one question to pose. If we draw attention to page 10 of the presentation, it says there under professional ethics, the department has an average of 127 working days to finalize a case of misconduct, which falls outside the prescribed 20 to 80 days. Working days. Chair, the reason I'm raising this, I really want to understand the methodology of coming to that figure and those numbers. We've recently come from oversight in the Free State, where we discovered a tractor that has gone missing since December. It was taken from the department, supposed to be handed to the beneficiaries in December, and no one knows nothing about it except for the person who signed for it. And nothing has been done. There are no findings. And we are in September. So we've exceeded that defined period and time here. So I'd like to understand then, how did the PSC come to the findings of these 127 working days? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, we want to appreciate the warm words of appreciation which have been expressed to the PSC. Thank you very much. I will attempt to answer some of the questions raised here. Firstly, especially the issue of ticking the boxes. I think the observation made is correct. And I think if you look at the conclusion, we have emphasized that now, that our approach so far since the inception of the of an MNE transversal system, which by its nature is supposed to be very simple because it is transversal, and therefore we did not want to have a complicated system that is complex, which will involve, you know, looking at outcomes, etc. Hence, the idea was to concentrate on a system which will be implementable on a large scale, the public service, which more than 140 departments. So you are quite correct that now our emphasis since its inception was more to a large extent on compliance, because we believe that now compliance is one of the requirements. It's a minimum requirement, but we need to move beyond compliance to outcome, especially in view of the new approach adopted by the current administration since 2009, which is more outcome-based approach, the 12 outcomes. So the emphasis is on outcomes rather than simple compliance, because at times it can just be, people can be so strategic by simply just complying without necessarily doing what is supposed to be done. Now, in view of that, the PSC has reviewed the system, because the key issue, what is important depends on the kind of an indicator as well as the norms, because the indicator is based on a particular assumption, and some of the assumptions are not actually, in compliance with the outcome. So now it is quite correct. Now, we have engaged in a very extensive system of reviewing our indicators as well as standards, so that now we are able to strike a balance. If I may just give you a bit of a history, there was a serious criticism of the past regime, you know, with an emphasis on compliance on regulations, you know, rules, etc. Now, what happened is that now there was, when the new democratic dispensation set in, they decided to do away with the regulations and rules, you know, which is an extreme. So we felt that now it is important that you must have the basic, the basic administrative rules must be there. So what we have come up with is the fact that it is not a kind of either compliance or outcome. It is both. You need a system which will actually be able to look at regulation as a minimum requirement, but equally important, we also need to look at outcomes. So which means now we have to review our system to be more complex to accommodate that. And so that is an exercise we have embarked in, and we think that now in future you'll see that we'll try to adjust, and so that now we are having a system that accommodates both compliance as well as outcomes. So I think we are spot on there. So, but what we know is this, that now what is important is that now the assessment of this department in particular, the basic administrative requirements are there, but it's quite true that now the question of outcomes is an issue which we need to be accommodated in terms of appropriate indicators. And then there was an issue of how often do we conduct investigations. Now, we conduct investigations almost annually. It depends on the departments that have been sampled, because we are a small department as a PSC and there are resource constraints. So we have to work and cut our coat in terms of our size. And therefore, more often than not, we will sample quite a number of departments, and then at times this department will form part of it, like it was the case here. I may also indicate that now, even last year, there is a report that is coming very soon, and which, of course, must also complement the issue that has been raised by the Honorable, the other side. This one is program assessment. The program assessment is more concerned with outcomes more than just compliance, and I think that report is coming very soon. It will be very, very interesting, because the emphasis there is not just no compliance, but it's more on the outcomes and those objectives which actually were set out by the government in 2009. We have assessed that it's a program assessment. It's going to be very interesting in terms of outcomes. And then, lastly, I think I'll leave the other questions to Govas. The question of how did we arrive at 127 working days, as well as others which were raised here. Thank you.
Yeah, Commissioner Temu has answered some of the questions very ably. On the ticking of the boxes, I just want to add that the review will include also the issues you raised about the weighting of the scores. Currently, the scores, like you said, are fairly equally weighted. Like I said, even in my own presentation, probably the audit opinion should be weighted much more heavily. Outcomes should be weighted much more heavily. At the moment, the weightings are fairly equal across all the principles. You also asked a question about samples, like, for instance, the samples of poverty reduction projects or development projects. Or another example is under the principle of fairness, the application of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. There we take a sample of actual decisions. We take the sample, and it's a random sample. Or the principle of the sample taking is that it should be random. The time it takes to deal with a misconduct case, there our sample will be a disciplined case. So if an example like a tractor, if it hasn't progress to the point where the department has taken discipline action, we wouldn't be counting those days. So we count the days from the time that the discipline process starts till the end of the discipline process. So the sample is on cases where discipline proceedings are already in process. So the methodology is there, we will miss sort of unreported cases. Also, just to add a bit on how often we undertake these investigations, like the chairperson of the PSC said, we can't do all departments every year. We thought at the outset of this system that we would be able to do all departments in a cycle of 3 years, but we couldn't even achieve that. That would have meant too many departments each year. Our biggest sample was 30 departments in a year, and that stretched our capacity quite a bit. The year that we are talking about, our sample was 22, which is 8 less, which is much more manageable for us. But with a sample of 22, we can't do all provincial and national departments every year, and there are even people who say we must enter the field of local government, and then it will become even more, capacity-wise, even more impossible. With regard to the tabling of these other reports that I referred to, I'm not quite exactly sure what the practice juice can have an answer there, but I'm quite sure it has been tabled in Parliament, but I'm not, I'm talking under correction there. They asked the member who referred to slide, missing slide, the conclusion slide and the slide I had on the regulatory framework. We added that later, so you are right, it's not in the back. And then the dark slides, if you look at the color, these colored slides, probably, especially the red color, would have printed, if you printed out the presentation, you would have printed probably quite black, if you printed in black and white. So sorry, my apologies for that. If you press it in black and white, if you don't use a color printer.
Oh.
we like to use colors in the presentation, but when we do the printing now, it's a problem. But nevertheless, my apologies for that. I think we've dealt with all the questions. Bruce?
Yeah, thanks. I think with regards to those reports that Honorable Mazibuko referred to, they were tabled in Parliament. And the unfortunate part, as the chairperson was saying, that this is the first time that we brought in the portfolio committees, that we rely on the portfolio committees providing us with the opportunity to come and brief them on those reports. So once, if we're not, we table them, but if we're not provided the opportunity, we find that we're not able to do that. But I think what we have done as part of our outreach program is to really interact more with the committee section to actually highlight to them the importance of some of the reports that we table so that it could be taken further.
I want to open another round of questions, and the minister is allowed to raise questions too, and the department too can raise questions, because this platform is presented to the PSC. Honourable members, if you have exhausted your questions, fine. I'm not asking you to invent questions. I've got two questions, PSC. I think they're not really matters of substance, but they're nonetheless important. The first one relates to your actual report on page 2. This one here, which is black and white. You indicate here that you gave them the draft, the department gave them a draft report on the 11th of April, and you asked them to come back to you on by the 28th, the 28th or 18th, I'm not sure. And then they never responded to, nor even comment on those issues. Or they didn't even comment on the report itself. You see, for me, although this appears to be a trivial question, it's a substantive question, because if the department is unable to comment on your report, it may be a reflection of something.
I do not want to conclude what it reflects. The second question relates to, I just want to know, what use does the department have of your report? How does it help them? And how would you know it has been assisted? I know that you say you have made particular recommendations and therefore they have to improve in this certain area. But as you would know, the sample will not go to those areas. As you said, the sample is random. So you may not be able to track what you recommended in the following year because it's a random sample, unless you will mix your random with those specific tracking issues. So that's why I'm saying, for what use will this report be to the department? I'm particularly disturbed by two things, Chief. You are saying to us that the reports that you have assessed, the one report was of the LRAD by the department itself. You yourself assessed the work of the department on the basis of that report they presented to you. So if they did not have a report, what would you have assessed? If the report was produced by a service provider, not by the department, the assessment would be of the quality of the service provider rather than the department itself. And that makes it more complicated, because when you said if the tractor, the missing tractor's case never got to the DC, therefore the tractor case will never be an important matter at all, and therefore it cannot be a measure of the responsiveness of the department to those kinds of things. So it complicates your methodology completely, because there can be so many missing links in your process. And that is why I'm asking the question of what use is this report to them. The last question relates to the substance question relates to the department told you this is the communications issue, this is the discipline issue, this is the participation issue on policy making and so on. You remember that's what you said. But you never verified whether what they were saying was correct or not. You were saying the fact that they are conscious of it is for you good, but it's not sufficient for performance. I am looking at performance itself. So you never verified whether the participants or the beneficiaries actually do participate in policy formulation. And I'm thinking in particular here that the report you're talking about covers the period 2001 to 2006. You may have been assessing the current situation, not the situation covered by the report. You may be assessing what the current minister is doing with the current leadership that he's got. You may not be assessing the period covered by the report itself. I'm worried about that. And therefore, verification of the beneficiaries they referred to would have been an important indicator as to whether the percentage you gave them reflects their actual participation to policy formulation. Thank you. If there are no further questions, so maybe you should go.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to respond to this difficult question. Perhaps starting with the last question, the actual performance or the actual participation and the findings that we have made, I think it falls within the same category of issues exactly, which has been raised. I think what the chair is highlighting actually is one of the weaknesses of concentrating on compliance, because at times, you know, the value you attach, you know, quantitatively may be misleading, you know. I think that's the point that comes very clear. And I think it's an observation which we have also made, that to say that now, the ideal approach will be not an either or, you know. Compliance should be seen as a minimum requirement, but in and of its own is not a sufficient condition when it comes to actual performance, the actual outcome, you know, the question of service delivery, you know, because that is the key issue. People are looking at the service delivery, the outcome, the impact on the people and the beneficiary. Not the simple, complying with the requirements, you know. So we are quite spot on, and as we have indicated, we have reviewed the whole system so that now we are able to accommodate both the requirements, compliance with the requirements, as well as ensuring that the actual output or outcome is being achieved. You also raised what is the value of meta evaluation. I think trying to answer this question, evaluating the evaluation, you know. Now the PSC is an independent constitutional body, which on its own or on request can, you know, investigate a particular management practice, etc. So now, when we decide independently, you say you are evaluating yourself, but who is evaluating you? That is a question we ask ourselves. Hence the question of the meta-evaluation. We are evaluating whether your evaluation yourself really does it make sense, you know. Or what actually, or what lessons can be drawn, you know. If now somebody at a distance, you know, who is not attached, you know, in that particular setup, you know, that is the point. It is true that now people need self-evaluation is very good, but when now the question is asked now the person who has evaluated himself, who evaluates him? I think that's the question that comes in terms of our mandate as an independent institution. I think COBAS can add, you know, more on this thing, but I was just broadly saying now the rationale behind undertaking a meta-evaluation. I'm not sure, but I think the other questions, I'll leave them to the department.
To add on the meta-evaluation, departments and government, there's also now the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation.
Make you laugh a little bit. Come back, he says meta-evaluation. So it means really, you're doing a helicopter vision.
So the departments commission many of these reports. And we, when we arrive in a, when we decide, let's say we decided we want to do a program evaluation of the Land Reform for Agricultural Development Program, and then we are confronted with the fact that the department already commissioned evaluation. So one should be careful then to go ahead and do your own evaluation. So we thought with this meta-evaluation program that we could make use of evaluations that departments generally have commissioned. And this was, we've done one on the Spanish Public Works Program, and we've done now one on the Land Reform Program. And in both cases, we actually found that the evaluations existing in the department. This one was not done by the department itself, it was commissioned by the department, but it was done by an outside service provider. And it was quite a good evaluation. It also then gives the commission a bit of confidence if it relies on not on his own report, but on somebody else's report. And the issue of no comment from the department, for us it's a serious issue, because and it also relates to use of these reports or these evaluations. The people say use will be enhanced if you have, from the start, a thorough or in-depth engagement with the department. Now, in this case, the engagement with the department came after, because when we didn't receive comments on the report, we finalized the report, we submitted it to the department, and then they then responded, like I said in the presentation. But we would prefer that engagement to be much earlier in the process, so that when you then point out deficiencies, the department can already then start to do something about it. The use of reports, we do feel that the fact that we put these evaluations in the public domain is discussed in committees like this, that it is presented to the department's top management, that we do have those engagements with the department, it does produce pressure for change. And the sustained pressure, we think in the end, if we then assess our own outcome, do sort of in the long run produce better results. If we take the results of this system now over time, from 2001, the trend is upwards. So the public service is being, a better public service is being built. Now, we can't ascribe that only to our own reports. Obviously, the work of a department like Public Service and Administration who issues guidelines, or the Treasury who issues guidelines, all those central departments play a role in this pressure for improvement. We think we also contributed in that role. Your question on verification, the evidence that we use for this exercise is basically documents and records, not just reports. So we will use the department's annual report in some instances, but in other instances we will go, like I said, down to the file level. So if we test, for instance, the administrative decisions, we will go to the submission to the decision maker. If it was the minister, there should be a submission to the minister, and that document we ask. We don't, as part of our methodology in this exercise, go to the beneficiaries themselves. We have other projects, other programs, like we do inspection, service delivery inspections as an example, and the inspections that we are currently busy with is inspections in the courts, specifically to look at backlogs in the courts. And with inspections, we do also go to ask beneficiaries or ask the public. So in other projects, our methodology will include the beneficiaries, not in this, not with this M&E exercise. Mm-hmm. And then the period of the report is 2010-11. When we enter a department in a year, which was 10-11, we try to use the most recent information. In the case of the annual report, it would have been then the annual report for the previous year, 2009-10. So in that sense, the information is a little bit dated, because the 10-11 annual report is only being published now. September after the closure of the financial year. So you're right, in some instances our information is a little bit dated, but we try to make use of as recent information as possible. I think that covers about everything.
Who's on
to?
We want to conclude the different things so that we can look forward to another visit next year. Even though you made a different report, is it possible for? I know the question is why are you not allowing us to report now? You are not
Yeah, perhaps to start on a general level, these M&E assessments are not a thorough diagnostic exercise. We don't try to solve all management problems in a department. We look at a few indicators. And then our recommendations simply reflect the weaknesses that we have pointed out. So it's not that we say, okay, look at all essential or look at key areas. Let's say restructuring, strategic planning, performance management. It's not a turnaround strategy, to sum it up. Our recommendations is not a turnaround strategy. But going now to the recommendations one by one, the first one is the department should ensure that all cases of misconduct in which a disciplinary hearing has been conducted are finalized within the 20 to 80 working days. So like I said, our recommendation simply reflects the weakness that we have pointed out. Then under development orientation, we said the department should, as part of its land reform project plans, spell out the monitoring and evaluation arrangements for the project. So each project plan should also have a detailed evaluation, or monitoring and evaluation plan. Then under Principle 4, the communication of administrative decisions, the department should adhere to the requirements of PAJA with regard to the communication of administrative decisions, namely that the communication should indicate the opportunity to make recommendations, to make representations, the right to appeal or review, or the right to request reasons for decisions. So in communicating the administrative decision, the Act also requires that you should spell out all the rights that the person then has, the person affected by the decision. One shouldn't assume that the person will know what his rights are. Then with regard, on Principle 6, with regard to the implementation of the fraud prevention plan, the department should ensure that all the fraud prevention plan strategies are implemented, determine the exact capacity requirements for handling fraud cases, and ensure that the necessary training in the handling of fraud cases are the events provided. With regard to the content of the annual report, the content of the department's annual report must fully comply with all requirements for annual reporting set by the National Treasury. Remember, I said in the presentation that the Treasury guideline contains a long list of items that that should be covered by an annual report. So we are simply saying all those items should be covered, and even if it's not applicable to the department, the department can say it's not applicable and it's consequently not reporting on that aspect. And then lastly, the time to fill a vacancy. The department should review its processes for filling a post, for filling of posts, and put in place measures that will improve performance on the time spent to fill a funded vacant post.
Chairperson, just a follow-up question on this, something that I didn't really pick up while we were going through the report, but I think it's an important question, if you would allow me quickly. Under the recommendations, for instance, let's just go take the first one, professional ethics, there's only one recommendation. But if you look at the page, there's actually two cases where it says area for improvement. So the question is, why are we only looking at a recommendation for one of the areas of improvement? If we are only making recommendations on certain of areas of improvement, what happens to the others? Chair, I'm sorry, but I didn't pick
not
it up.
Not a turnaround strategy.
Now. I know it's not a turnaround strategy, but what? When do we make recommendations only on certain aspects of the report?
Okay. The department commissioned a report itself. It did not act on its own report. But why are you expecting them to act on the PSC's report? Why? Did you? Yeah. I thought the question was irrelevant because you did indicate this is not a turnaround strategy. But you said you have found areas of weakness where there should be improvement. In your summary of recommendations, you did not include all recommendations on areas of improvement.
Yeah.
And that's the question.
To make one example, we wouldn't, for instance, even if the finding is that, well, even if we say one reason for poor performance is qualified audit, if we now make recommendations around that, we will be repeating the audit again with recommendations. And the department is already dealing with that under that separate process. In the case of the professional ethics example, that was raised, the other area that we raised here is, okay, there should be regular management reporting in cases of misconduct. But no evidence on management response on the last report. We didn't make a recommendation specifically on that. Well, the whole purpose of management report.
No, you're not sparring, you're bopping and whizzing. So, Tim, do you want to comment?
No, thank you, Chair. Yeah, no, I think as was pointed out, that essentially, if you look at this, we're concentrating on basic administrative requirements. And then some of the issues are obvious, but we noted that if the committee feels that we have to make a recommendation in each and every findings, you know, I think we'll oblige. You know, I think that's the purpose of this engagement. You know, engagement means it's give and take. If it's really in the interest of the committee, we will definitely make recommends for each and every finding. Thank you.
Chairperson, all thank you very much, honorable members, honorable minister. I think what we can just say is that we have engaged with the commission subsequent to this report, and fully embraced the recommendations that they have put to us, and we are cooperating with them in their implementation going into the future. Thank you very much.
See, Mr. Mtim, our responsibility is to take serious every report that comes to us. Sometimes reports may be misleading themselves, not because the intention of the person who produced the report wants to mislead, but because it may be conflicting with another report that has been produced by another entity. I'm sure you must have seen the chaos that was in Parliament yesterday. It didn't. Well, members of the public were commenting to me about the chaos they saw in Parliament yesterday. The rules for Section 9 institutions specifically say they must report to Parliament. So if the Section 9 institution and Section 10 institution reports elsewhere, and Parliament debates a report that is presented elsewhere, it confuses the line of communication between itself and the institutions. And this is the result of what happened yesterday. So it is important for us to take every report and place it in its correct perspective and use it for the purpose intended. That is why we kept on asking the question, what is the purpose of this report? What use is it to the department, so that we can pursue that line as expected both by yourselves in accordance with your mandate and also by Parliament in accordance with why they created the PSC. That is purely the reason why we're trying to pursue this matter. Otherwise, there's absolutely no other reason. And we also do not want the department to have a burden of having to respond to every thing that is said about the department. Sometimes there's wisdom in saying nothing. Mm-hmm. I know in the media terrain, a no comment is exactly the same as the opinion of the Auditor General when he says no. What is that thing? When the Auditor General says no opinion, I want to express no opinion on this report. So no comment in the media terrain is almost exactly the same as that one in some other instances. But there's a famous or infamous businessman based in New York who says there's nothing like too much exposure. And there are many people in South Africa who are taking that seriously. And remember that businessman, that rich one, who's on TV and tells you are fired. And remember that one? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That businessman says it is strategy. There's nothing like too much exposure. So some people go to that extent, too much exposure. Some people go to the other extreme, no comment. You have to balance and strategy in terms of how to respond to reports. And Tina, we do not want to follow every report. We were saddled with a huge report here last month. Human Rights Watch. It's an international institution based in America. They did an investigation, a desktop investigation here in the Western Cape, and they came up with a pronouncement about how horrible the Western Cape is in terms of how it treats its workers in the wine farms and fruit farms. When we went down to the methodology, we found these people do not know nothing about what's going on in the farms in the Western Cape. So it's an important matter for us to make sure that whatever report comes to us, we really have to dig deeper and not take it at face value. So we're not picking on you. We have an experience in these kinds of reports. Many people make claims, but we have to follow those claims before you make a pronouncement. Thank you very much. The meeting is not adjourned, but the commission can be released if they want to. But if you want to observe our last part of our meeting, fine, we have a set of minutes here of the 31st of August. Members were given these minutes ahead of the beginning of this meeting. I know, Ms. Moshi, you can't leave because the gentlemen this side and this side are blocking you from leaving. So you have to sit and listen. But we because the minutes were given to members in advance, we take them as read. Can I get any proposal on the minutes? Mm-hmm. Sustain.
Propose that we adopt the minutes to approve what I'm doing.
Ms. Segunda, Ms. Pawa, agree. Thank you very much. The minutes are adopted unamended. It's a very good improvement formula. I like that. And the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.